tell me how cryptocurrency came to Nigeria.
Right. So cryptocurrency, I mean, obviously, it was...
From Recorded Future News, I'm Dina Temple-Raston, and this is Click Here's Mic Drop, an extended cut of an interview we think you'll want to hear more of. As we've reported in our episode on Tuesday, Nigerian authorities have detained a mid-level Binance executive in what looks like a bid to hold an outsider responsible for the nation's bleak economic picture. And to understand how Nigeria has come to blame cryptocurrency exchanges for what ails it, you need some history and a brief primer on the Nigerian economy, which makes it hard to believe that this economic situation has anything to do with Binance at all. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Adam Fleming from the Global Story podcast from the BBC World Service. We are looking at Lina Khan, the face of the US government's battle to regulate big tech. She's already redefined the way we talk about monopolies. Now she's taking on the likes of Amazon and Meta. But who is she? And will she win? The Global Story brings you fresh takes and smart perspectives from BBC journalists around the world. Find us wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
Blockchain, NFTs, AI. What does this mean for you and me? I'm Sherelle Dorsey, host of the TED Tech Podcast, where we bring you the latest innovations and biggest ideas in tech. Tech is evolving fast and it affects our lives, from the metaverse to the watches on our wrists. You'll learn why people in AI make good business partners, about our future self-driving robo-taxi, what the next generation of Siri, Alexa, Google looks like, and a lot more. Find TED Tech on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
I'm Dina Temple-Rost, and this is Click Here's Mic Drop. There's a running joke on Nigerian social media that goes something like this.
If you ask someone to explain Nigeria to you, and they explain it and you understand it, then the person has done a bad job.
In other words, the more you try to understand Nigeria, the more confused you are supposed to become. So we turn to Feyi Fawahimni to help us out.
It's an incredibly complex country. Both physically, Nigeria has like hundreds of languages and hundreds of ethnic groups. People talk past each other. The politics is complex. So it's unlike any other country I know of.
But it isn't the languages or the ethnic groups that are to blame for the state of Nigeria's economic affairs. Feyi says that the blame is better placed on more than a decade of misguided economic policy.
Prices are rising every day. New inflation figures came out. Inflation is well over 30%, highest on record for, I don't know, a few decades. Food inflation is at 40%. So, you know, things are really bad.
Back in 2014, Nigeria was pumping loads of oil. It was one of Africa's top producers of crude, and oil accounted for a lion's share of the government's revenue. And when it was topping $100 a barrel, that was a good thing. There was a lot of money flowing into Nigeria. The problem was that the Nigerian government was counting on the price of oil staying at those kinds of levels. And they started to spend a lot.
Things like the minimum wage paid to government workers, it more than doubled in that time. So it was basically a huge increase in government spending.
This doubling in government wages might have been sustainable, but for one thing. In mid-2014, the world's price of oil took a spectacular dive.
The world hasn't seen such a drop in crude oil prices for a long time.
We've been following the dramatic drop in oil prices over the last
few weeks. The dramatic fall in oil prices.
So again, a big drop for the overall price of crude. Now, if you look at the ripple effect,
Nigeria suddenly found itself trying to negotiate one of the worst oil crashes of the post-World War II era.
When the crash came in August 2014 and prices dropped dramatically, Nigeria found itself in a really big hole.
Nigeria responded with deficit spending. And very quickly, nearly all the money it was bringing into the country was going out again to service debt. The Nigerian people weren't just angry, they were desperate. They wanted economic reforms, a return to prosperity. And then a presidential campaign that year was promising exactly that.
This is the Nigerian Elections Debate Group.
Welcome to Nigeria 2015.
The presidential elections in Africa's most populous nation, Nigeria.
He is an upright, honest man who is...
Our government will be committed to the cause of the common man, whether you are a Christian...
So we get a new president that comes in.
The new president is Muhammadu Buhari. And let's just say he isn't a free market guy. His idea of economic policy was to turn to a command economy and have the government hoard foreign exchange. And there was this crazy list of things you couldn't get foreign exchange to buy. Rice, cement, sardines, toothpicks, even soap. So people started to look for alternatives, monies that would allow them to skirt government currency restrictions.
All kinds of people then began to explore other sources. And this is where crypto really, really took hold.
Cryptocurrencies were an obvious choice. If the government was going to control production, investment, prices, and incomes, cryptocurrencies would then provide a way to get around that. And it wasn't people looking to do shady things that turned to crypto. It was millions of everyday citizens just trying to keep their businesses running.
It became adopted by people with legitimate needs, whose needs could not be met by official or even the black market. And they had nowhere to turn to.
So Nigeria's central bank is a little different from ours. The U.S. Federal Reserve, among other things, sets interest rates between banks, which in turn trickles down to affect the interest rates for everyday people on things like mortgages and credit cards. Feyi says that the Nigerian central bank doesn't really get involved in interest rates because interest rates don't really have a huge effect on the economy. There aren't a lot of home buyers or equity loans.
In Nigeria, it's quite different. Mortgages are practically non-existent. Most people don't have bank loans. You know, bank loans are super expensive. So basically, that interest rate relationship between the central bank is practically non-existent.
Instead, the Nigerian central bank focuses almost exclusively on trying to prop up the value of the currency, by hook or by crook.
Since 2015, the approach has been for the central bank to maintain some kind of hold on the exchange rate, using all kinds of unorthodox means.
In most countries, global currency markets set the rates. But in Nigeria, the central bank does, in these kind of predetermined steps. It sets a rate until it's unsustainable, and then it sets a new, inevitably lower rate, and then so on and so on and so on. After oil prices plunged, they set the rate by pegging the naira to the US dollar.
So things can stay, quote-unquote, stable for a year, and then when the pressure breaks the dam, then things move again.
But that seemed unsustainable. So last year, Nigeria's new president decided that they should do what most countries do.
So when this new government came into office last year, they say, okay, we're moving away from all of this and we're going to try and move towards a market-determined rate.
They were going to let the market decide what the naira should be worth. The results were swift and predictably catastrophic when Nigeria's naira currency was evaluated in this more market-driven, more objective way.
The immediate reaction to this is that the naira loses value dramatically, almost overnight.
It lost 40% of its value against the dollar in the first 3 months of this year. So regular Nigerians, seeking something more stable, began pouring into cryptocurrencies. And more than any other platform, people flocked to Binance. And as the new trading platform of choice, it became an easy way for politicians to dodge responsibility and instead blame Binance for the currency plummeting. Though so far, they haven't so much blamed Binance as singled out Tigran Gambaryan, an official representative of the company, as their fall guy. He's been detained since February, And initially, officials accused him of helping Binance manipulate the value of the Naira. But to do that, at least in the traditional sense, Binance would have needed to hoard the Naira, like the government used to do. But it didn't do that. It didn't have a giant pool of Naira. All it had was customers. And it was those customers who set the rate, not the company. That's how it works on the Binance platform. The users agreed on a rate for the Naira amongst themselves, peer-to-peer. Binance has since stopped all Naira trading in Nigeria. And in the meantime, Nigerian authorities have shifted gears. They dropped the accusations of currency manipulation and now say that Binance and its executive Tigran Gambaryan evaded taxes and laundered money and might have to pay some fines. Tigran's trial is set for mid-May, and so is his bail hearing. From Recorded Future News, this has been Mic Drop. It was written, edited, and produced by Kat Shuknek, Sean Powers, and me, Dina Temple-Raston. We'll be back on Tuesday. Have a great weekend.
Looking for more of the cybersecurity and intelligence coverage you get on Click Here? Then check out our sister publication, The Record, from Recorded Future News. You'll get breaking cyber news from reporters in New York, Washington, London, and Kyiv, among others. And you'll see for yourself why it attracts hundreds of thousands of page views every month. Just go to therecord.media.